Welcome to the Rebooting Business Podcast, where we discuss how businesses can reboot, rebuild, and come back bigger and stronger than ever before in a post-COVID-19 reality. And now, here's your host, David Summerfleck.
And hello, my name's David Summerfleck, and I'm your host for Rebooting Business. And thank you for watching or listening to this. My guest today is Miney Homer. Okay, well, I'm trying to pronounce it. Thank you so much for your help. I want to do you justice. How would you describe what you do and what exactly, who you are, what you do, and why you do it? I know because we've already spoken, but I really don't know that much about NLP and how to put it into context. So I'll let you go ahead and get started.
Okay, so I guess I wear a few hats. I wear the business coach hat. I wear the motivator hat, the inspirer hat. I have courses available for people to start from as little as a dollar down. So I do a mixture of things. And the reason why I do a mixture of things is because I know that it's different strokes for different folks. And also because in my own journey, I've started down a certain pathway and discovered it's probably not quite the pathway I wanted to travel down. And so I've sort of like backed up and gone down another path. Because let's face it, in business, that's what exactly happens, isn't it? You can do something and it doesn't quite work out the way you want it to. So you'll take stock and you'll go in another direction. So, I mean, I guess you can probably call me a bit of an all-rounder. I've been in business myself for over 23 years. In that time, I've actually created 11 businesses from scratch with very little money down. Some of those businesses have been sold quickly for profit. Others have been held onto for over 10 years and taken to over seven figures in income. So it's like there's a real mixed bag. Some people would call me a jack of all trades. And that's not a bad thing when you perfect each skill as you go.
So what is Tall Poppies exactly? And who does that aim to serve?
Okay, so Tall Poppies Rising was developed in 2018 after I did my NLP training. And it was aimed to serve women around the world who are very much like I was, the person I was. And that person is somebody who is quite capable of being an entrepreneur, quite capable of creating their own business, quite capable of climbing the corporate ladder, quite capable of having an exceptional life, in fact. However, they allow, in their minds, they allow either other people's opinions or the opinions they have in their own mind to stop them and hold them back. There's actually a syndrome here in Australia called Tall Poppy Syndrome. And what you find is that at every corner and every curve of your journey, there's going to be somebody new that wants to cut you down or tear you down or bring you down. And it's basically a syndrome here that people allow people to do that to them. They're so worried about what people think or what they, you know, might say or do. So yeah.
Is that a recognized syndrome or like an expression? Because I've never heard that before.
Yes, it is actually recognized. It's actually recognized as like a thing over here in Australia and New Zealand, I believe, where it's just, yeah, no matter what. I mean, I get it daily. I get it daily these days. And as I rise, like in both my personal and my professional life, as I rise higher, apparently it just gets worse. So you've just got to get stronger and, you know, stand your ground and keep going with your message.
Why is that? Because it's the first I've heard of that expression or syndrome. It's the first I've ever heard of it. And certainly we have the equivalent in the US, I'm sure. And now you have people attacking other people who want to wear masks. So if you go out in public and you're concerned about getting COVID-19, now in the US, if people are wearing masks in public, they could be shamed, attacked, or, you know, I've seen all kinds of articles. I'm sure you have too. I don't know if that's going on in Australia or not, but is that kind of like a representation of that syndrome?
Yeah, I actually think that it is, because the way we've been brought up, if that's the right word, in the way that the way that we're taught is we're taught to be good little students so that we can go out and we can get a really good grade at school, go out and get a really good job, sit in that job until we're 65, retire in our little box, and if you're lucky, you'll get a nice gold watch, and then you go into retirement and you might drive a little bus around the country. And that's the life that people are taught to live. They're taught that that is the life that they can expect, and that is the life that they should. I'm going to use that word. I use that word very rarely, but I'll use the word should be doing. And so for us people who have no box, there is no box for me. It's like I struggle to fit in with the people that are in the box. Does that make sense?
Yes.
I have a really hard time with that myself. And everybody is their own person. It's okay for them to be like that, but they also have a hard time with people like me who are outside of the box and who are living their life as they dream and as they want to. And so it's natural, same with people wearing masks, it's natural for human beings to want to try and pull you back into the box. And that is what they're trying to do with these people that are now wearing masks. They want everybody to be normal, and so they're trying to pull these people back into the box, and all these people are doing is basically saying nope.
Yeah, it's it really does seem like some kind of a tribal group think, almost like a herd type of mentality. So now I know it's tall poppy syndrome. How did you start your business? Would you consider it a consulting business, or is it something else? And then I want to get more into NLP.
Okay. So I guess by the time I'd done this 10 times before, it's like I realized my superpower was actually starting new businesses. That's where I absolutely shine. When I have that passion and that desire and that the thrill of the chase, I suppose, in building that business, that's when I fire the most. And so I guess like all of the other businesses that I created along the path, I created the consulting business because it was where I was at in my life at the time, if that makes sense.
Yes, absolutely.
I was doing a lot of work on my own mind and my own mindset. And this is work that I'd searched for 40 years. You know, I'd searched for the answers for 40 years and suddenly I'd found them. And so with that in mind and grabbing it like I was a dog with a bone, if you understand what I mean. I couldn't get enough, do you know? It's natural that I went down the coaching and consulting line. So, yeah.
So the starting businesses was just something that you always gravitated toward, that you always enjoyed doing, and maybe finding the right one for you, or maybe the one that would be the most enjoyable.
I'm not sure about that. I think it's just what was happening for me in my life at the time. I mean, I first started as like a commercial cleaning business, was my very first business. I didn't like cleaning urinals at 2 a.m. in the morning for some strange reason.
Yeah, I can understand.
Yeah. That didn't thrill me. And then I moved into mechanics businesses because that's what my partner at the time was into. From that, it morphed. I was bored on the reception counter, so I had a jewelry business. When I got pregnant, I decided I didn't want to buy baby products, so I created a baby products business. Do you know, it's just been really where I've been in my life pretty much, and same with the coaching and consulting. It's just where I am on my journey. And that's, for me, some people get into a business and they stick with it for their entire lives because they still want to try and stay in that little box a little.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. So for anyone new to NLP, how exactly do you define it and break it down and explain how it works? Then I want to get into how you became exposed to it and kind of grew into your present interest in it, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. All right, so NLP first, it stands for Neuro-Linguistic Programming, and it's a mouthful, so that's why we call it NLP.
Sure.
It's just so much easier. And basically it comes down to its language of the mind. All right, so we have a conscious and an unconscious mind, and what most people do not realize is that the unconscious mind actually controls 90% of our thoughts, our behaviors, and our actions. Okay, and the old conscious mind is out there ticking along, only really in control of 10%. And your unconscious mind can store things from your birth, even in the womb. It can store thoughts and feelings, and it can actually have them passed down from generations, because when your mother feels an emotion, that gets passed on to you in the womb. Or when your mother has a belief system, it's actually been shown with tests on rats that, you know, belief systems can actually be passed down generation by generation. Okay, so most people are walking around these days with negative emotions like anger and sadness and fear and hurt and guilt. And many people are walking around with limiting beliefs like the I'm not good enough, the I'm not worthy, and they may not be 100% sure where it all stems from. Well, it'll stem from before the age of 7, when either a parent or a teacher or somebody else that at the time you consider to be like an authority figure has said something to you or displayed some kind of behavior that's told you that you're not good enough, or that you're not worthy, or you can't have what you want, or money grows on trees, or, you know, rich people are snobs, or whatever it is that they've told you. And that can define your behavior for your entire life with that belief, unless you do something to change it at that root level where it was first implanted.
So how did you come to have an interest in it and then say, this is something for me that I want to be identified with and start a business working with people in NLP, however that would be defined?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so for me, it's been a lifelong journey. I grew up in a low socioeconomic area. Mum looked after 3 girls. My father worked nights. And my mother suffered from depression and, you know, lack of self-beliefs, lack of self-worth. And so it was quite abusive. Her go-to was abuse, verbally, physically, mentally. So we grew up in that environment. And, yeah, she did the best she could with what she had. I get that now. However, what that developed was 3 young girls who had no self-esteem, no self-worth, no self-belief or confidence. And I was lucky enough to get out. I look at it that way now, but at the time it was the toughest experience of my life. When I was 24, my father died very suddenly. And as my family only knew how to inflict pain on each other, they threw me out completely. They cut me off and they threw me out and told me basically I wasn't to have anything to do with them, their children, or anything. Mm. In hindsight, it was the best gift they ever gave me. But yeah. At the time, at 24, having just lost my father and everything else in my life, it was like the worst thing ever. I'm sure you can imagine.
Oh, absolutely.
And, yeah. But what that did, again, in hindsight, and hindsight's an amazing thing, is it made me start looking outside of that box. At that stage, I just wanted to get back in the box. I just wanted to be back in the box because that's all I knew. And that's what most people know, but I'd been pushed out of that box. And now I know I was always being pushed out of that box, even in school and everything else. I've never fitted into the box, ever. You know, I know that now, but at the time I was still desperately clinging to the box because it's all I knew. It was like to be normal, I had to be in the box, if you understand what I mean.
Yes, I do. So how did come to you were introduced to NLP or discovered it? Was it going to a Tony Robbins event or something that introduced you to it? And then how did you come to say, well, this is going to be my consulting business? And then is it something that you as a practitioner can apply to yourself? Because, you know, it's so hard. For example, I can look at another business and within a few minutes of talking to someone, I can tell what's holding them back or why that business is not as profitable as it could be. But applying that to oneself is more difficult because we have issues being objective with ourselves. So How did you take it to the next step? And then is it something that you could apply to yourself to facilitate growth?
Okay. So for me, I did discover Tony Robbins. It was a good 20 years ago. I guess I was just out in the realm looking, but it was only in 2014 that I ran out of excuses as to why I couldn't go to one of his live events. It was like my dream was a hug and a photo. That was my dream. But, you know, because I didn't believe in myself or my worth, I made every excuse under the book as to why I couldn't make that happen, do you know? And then some of my excuses ran out and I had to take action or look like a complete flake and a fraud if I didn't. And so I went to his event with absolutely no idea how I was going to make it happen. And even the little voice came in to say, you know, if you don't make it, it doesn't matter. You know, it's okay, it's fine, it's cool. You come this far, do you know? And it was actually my little five-year-old boy, and I'd love to share this moment with you, who changed it all for me. So he'd heard Mum talking and he'd heard Mum saying about how, you know, she wanted to go and get a hug and a photo from Tony, you know, all the big, oh, you know, wouldn't it be great if I could do that? And he was aware of where I was. And the phone rung and this little five-year-old voice said to me, Mum, have you got your photo with Tony Robbins yet? And it was like, from that moment on, I knew that it wasn't about my dream any longer. It was about my son's dream as well. It was about his dream and showing him that you go for what you want in life. You don't sit back. You do what it takes to get the goal. And I knew from that moment that no matter what, I had to find the way. And that weekend was incredible. It was like the universe just ran with that and just put one thing in front of me, you know, one thing after another, meeting the right people, being asked to sit at the right tables at the right time when the person came running up saying, I know how to meet Tony Robbins, you know, and this kind of thing, just it just all fell into place, you know. But what was interesting is it was a massive leap for me to actually do it. It wasn't just handed to me. I had to work hard to get it to happen. I basically had to make some pretty full-on decisions on the spot on whether I was going to meet Tony or not meet Tony. And that was the way it was. It cost me an investment. I had to donate to his charity to make it happen, do you know? And it was like I knew it would, you know, affect my family for a little while to do that because it was basically every cent that was in the bank, do you know? But what was more important to me was the fact that I had to prove to my children that you go for what you want. You do what it takes. And I did, and I got my hug and I photo. And what that did was plant a seed. And I know this is a little long-winded, but it's important that I give all the details.
Sure.
It planted a seed in my mind, and that seed simply was, well, if I can make that happen, what else can I do? And that was really the turning point for me. It took a long time. It took a couple of years. I dabbled with some NLP. I had a phobia around trying new foods. And I had a friend of mine remove that in a couple of hours with NLP. And I guess I just got really curious and I made some inquiries about learning NLP. And before I knew it, I was sucked into a course because they're really good at that. So I did the training and I realized after 40 years of searching for the answer to my self-confidence and my self-worth, that this is the stuff that was going to get me to where I wanted to go. It was completely transforming my mind and my mindset around things that had happened in my childhood to the point where I could see that with work, and it's not just something that happens like that. It takes work like anything. Do you know, you can't go and get a completely fit body if you just go to the gym once. Do you know what I mean? You've got
right.
to keep going, do you know?
It's a process.
And so, yeah, and, you know, I am a big believer that when you decide on a pathway, the universe will do everything it can to help you on that pathway, even if it's not good. So after my training, I actually went through and made a big breakup in a relationship. It was just a friendship, but I went through this major breakup and it broke me. It broke me. And most people would quit and go back into their little box. But for me, I was in pain, yes, but it just helped me to grow even more. And so what I found is, like, over the space of 2 years, it's like I built my self-confidence, I built my self-worth, my self-belief. And like now there's very little that'll stop me, very little that's holding me back. And this is the reason why I can now put myself out there and become a number one international bestseller. Do you know what I mean? It's like, this is why, because I'm not afraid anymore to put myself out there. And now if something comes up for me, I'm very blessed to have the mental capacity to be able to work on myself. Most people aren't lucky enough to be able to do this. Most people need to work with a practitioner, and there's no shame in that whatsoever. I am blessed enough to be able to, if something triggers me, for example, if something triggers me, I'm able to stop and recognize and say, oh, okay, all right, so that's triggered me. What is that triggering? And I'm able to work on myself because I know the techniques, and I have what they call an auditory digital mind. So I can actually, like, it's like I've got two minds, if that makes sense, and I can sort of like have one work on the other at the same time, you know. I'm blessed for that. Many people are just do the work, you know, do the work, do what you need to do to get the same result that I've got, really.
Could you, is there a way that you could give an example of how NLP could work? For example, if someone is stressed out from looking at the news, okay, and I know a lot of people are going through this, whether they would admit it or not. How could you use the principles of NLP to help you with stress due to what's going on in the world, or for that matter, being more creative? Could you give one or two examples of how you could use it?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's interesting that you bring up that stress about watching the news, because I haven't actually watched the news in 4 years.
Wow. You're lucky.
Am I? I just turned it off one day.
I've taken breaks. I've taken breaks for like a week where I just didn't look at it. But then I got curious again. So,
okay,
I get what you're saying, but also it's like, to some extent, I wouldn't want to go to the grocery store right now and not know that there's a pandemic that could make you very ill or cause other issues. So you want to be informed, but not to the point where it's causing you stress or anxiety, or you're getting caught up in drama or something. So how could you use NLP to cope with that, or to be more creative when you feel whatever else is going on in your head?
Okay. All right. So it's really interesting what you said there about you wanting to be informed. And this is the lie a lot of people tell themselves about why they watch the news, is because they feel if they don't watch the news, they'll become ill-informed. All right. So I know there's a pandemic going on. Okay. I know there's a pandemic going on. I have had my children at home. I see enough of what I need to find out on places like Facebook and things like that. Okay. I don't need to watch the bleed until it, you know, if it bleeds, it leads news. I don't need to watch that. At the end of the day, the way I look at it, and this is the way you can use NLP to actually do a reframe on the situation. David, if somebody dies in Australia from COVID-19, what can you do about that? As a person?
Not much.
You could
grieve for the person or for the family. You could try to be supportive if you know the family. You could try to learn what was it that caused this. So maybe I need to, for example, maybe you need to wear a mask when you go out. Maybe it's, you know, more prevalent in certain geographic areas. But, you know, on a direct level, you can't really do much to affect the lives of those people. You can't really help the family only so much.
No, you can't. And that's exactly the thing. And that's what's important. You know, yes, you're right. You can absolutely care. You can actually absolutely, like, you know, spend your energy about a family that you don't know and you have no way of impacting, or you can just not. And that's what it comes down to. I mean, what you choose to feed into your mind is completely and utterly up to you. So the reframe there is like it was like even when the Ebola was going around, you know, and I would say to people, I said, look, I said, I'm sorry, but there's nothing I can do. I'm sorry for those people. I really feel for those people and I'm sorry for those people. However, there is nothing I can do to help them. There is nothing I can do to serve them. So unless it's a problem for myself and my family, I don't wish to know. And that is what you can do for yourself. That way, I mean, say you said so many people are getting stressed over news. There's nothing you can do.
So don't engage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So why engage in it? Do you know what I mean? Focus on what's good. Focus on what's, you know, important for you and your family and your friends, do you know? And, you know, keep your energy there. Don't put it out.
So what? So would that be a part of the other question as far as being more creative or being more productive? So if I don't look at, you know, the 6 o'clock news, for example, then maybe you're saying I would have more energy and focus to look at what is more relevant to me or be more creative. Is that a fair taking it a step further with what you just said?
Yes, because you've got more time. You've got more time. You've got more time to focus on what's important. And if that's the kind of person you are, then perhaps you could spend that time looking at what you could do for your local area or family even to help in the situation. I mean, rather than worry about what's happening a world away, just focus on what's happening in your own space and in your own place, really. And you'd be surprised how much happier you'll be.
Now, with NLP, I you tell me if it this is wrong. Is it, would you consider it similar to operant conditioning? Is it similar or very different from operant conditioning? So, for example, if you want to associate one thing with another thing, then you would engage that. Like if I wanted to associate positive feelings with talking to you, just for example, so I would, every time I would talk to you or look at your website, I would do something to make me feel good. Is NLP kind of similar to that in terms of how you would use it differently than operant conditioning, you know, where it's like every time they wanted to make the dog come, they would give it food. So the dog would smell food and then come running. Is it something like that in terms of how you would use it on a daily basis?
From what you're describing there, I would suggest that what you're talking about is working within the conscious mind, where NLP works with the unconscious mind and changing the unconscious behaviors, which is the 90% that we were talking about earlier. Take, for example, people reacting to situations. And let's talk about anger for a moment, okay? So let's say another person does something to harm your child, for example, in some way or shape or form. Okay, now it's quite natural for a human being to get all riled up and really to protect their child. And even with my NLP training, naturally I'm still Mama Bear. And if anybody was to do anything to hurt one of my children, I would still definitely stand in front of them. Do you know what I mean? And like stand my ground. It all comes down to the emotional reactions that you have around that event. Now, and this is where NLP is different. So, I mean, like, let's say that, I don't know, there was a schoolyard bully that picked on my child. Okay, let's use that as an example, okay? So the average mother would get upset. The average mother would get angry. The average person would, like, you know, yell and scream and kick and fight maybe and, you know, sort of like, you know, go to the bully's mother and rah, 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 you know, kind of thing, you know. Whereas having done the work in NLP, I can look at the situation probably more candidly than that mother. Because even though I'm sad for my child that, you know, they're being picked on, I can see the other side of the situation firstly. So I can see the bully side, as far as that kid's probably having a rough time. That kid's probably, do you know, I don't excuse it, because there's behaviours that you can do rather than that. But that kid's, so maybe that child is not being brought up in the way that they need to be brought up to get what they need, get their needs met. Because usually what it comes down to in any situation is people aren't getting their needs met. Okay. Right. So I can look at it more objectively with the NLP. However, I also don't feel the emotion. And that is what's really important, because that is actually what drives people, is that reaction, that trigger in their unconscious mind. They've been taught to react a certain way to a certain situation, and that's even instilled in human beings as, like, you know, the survival mode. You know, we are wired, you know, we are wired for drama, we're wired for trouble, okay? And so when you've done the work with NLP, working with the unconscious, I mean, I can have something like that happen, and there's no emotional response at my end. I don't get angry. I don't feel the anger. I don't feel, you know, worked up. I'm still going to stand in front of my child, and I'm still going to, like, stand my ground and say, no, you will not treat my child this way. However, there's no, if you understand what I mean. There's none of that.
Yeah, I do understand. That would be, that's the outcome that you want to achieve. Mm. So I guess, how would you get from point A to point B using NLP? Is there like just one, is there like one step, like the child who's being bullied, would you expose the child to bullying more, and then when he's exposed to it, you would say, well, okay, now we're going to go through steps how to better cope with it? Is that a fair example of how you would use NLP, or no?
Okay. So the really in the bully situation, there's two different stories going on, okay? So you've got the story of the bully, and you've got the story of the child being bullied, all right? So let's focus on the story of the bully to start with. Now, you know, what I would do in the situation, and obviously you've got to be able to do this with the parents' permission. You've got to be able to work with the parents as well. They've got to be in that place where they would allow this work to happen. So you'd want to establish what it is that the bully is missing out on, what needs are not being met for them that, you know, allows them to, I guess, justify the behavior of picking on the other child. Do you know what I mean? So you'd want to work with the bully first and find out what belief systems they have in place in their unconscious mind that they believe that perhaps picking on this child is giving them some kind of power, allowing them to be in their power, you know, and being that strong bully. And if I pick on this kid, I'm going to feel powerful and I'm going to feel in control, you know, and like, yeah, look at me, I'm amazing, look at me, I'm great, you know, which is why most of them do it. They just want to uplift themselves, okay? And they've been taught from wherever that to uplift themselves, they've got to push other people down. And that is the behavior that they have been taught, okay? That's one side. And then you've got the child that's being bullied, okay? So what's that child doing? Mm. What is that child being led to believe? Are they cowering away? Are they going, oh, I'm worthless. Oh, I'm not good enough. Oh, you know, I can't stand. Or are they in that space where they're resilient, where they're strong, and where no matter what anybody says to them, they can stand their ground and they can say, do you know what? I'm sorry that you're behaving in that way, but no, here are my boundaries. You will respect them or I will leave. Do you know what I mean? So it just really depends on, do you know, where people are. And no matter where you are on that scale, whether you're the bully or you're the bullied, NLP can actually help you to really reach that middle ground, you know, where you can stand your ground. I mean, let's face it, you know, if you allow people to bully you, you're going to come across that behavior your entire life, because there are bullies everywhere.
Oh, absolutely. So the NLP, I mean, basically what you're saying is before you could use the NLP principles, you'd have to talk to the bully and perhaps work with the bully first and then maybe one of the victims. Or no?
Look, it can all all be done at the same time? Obviously separate conversations, naturally, because you know you want to keep it open. There's no reason why you couldn't be working with both of them at the same time to work out what it is that they both need to be able to reach that point where this person no longer feels like they need to get the upper hand, which is what it normally is, and this person feels strong enough that they can come and they can, like, if the bully comes to get the upper hand, they can be strong enough to stand in their ground. You know, this is the thing.
So you'd have to come up with exercises, I guess, to do with both parties, right?
Not more, and not really exercises. What you would do is you would really, for both parties, you ascertain what the root cause is. So let's say for the bully. Now, for somebody that wants to get power, there's somebody who feels like they don't have the power and they want to get that power back, then there's usually something around self-worth. There's usually something around I'm not good enough. Mm. And they've been taught by whoever that the way to feel good enough and the way to feel worthy is to stand over people.
I've worked with many people like that.
Many people. Whereas it's pretty much the same problem on the other end of the scale too, where the bullied feels like they have no self-worth and they have no, you know, they're not good enough. But however, for them it's different because they've been taught to, you know, turn the other cheek or whatever and just sort of like, you know, don't rock the boat, don't cause issues, you know, because, you know, that'll make you look worse to other people. And so they tend to like shy away. And so what ends up happening is the bully ends up getting that power. And so they might feel good about themselves, but this poor person down here still feels like crap. You know what I mean? It's like, so it's about working with an individual to work out basically what belief systems they have. And 99% of the time, it's usually the I'm not good enough, the I'm not worthy pattern. That's normally what it is, because let's face it, like, I mean, how many people do you know in our age group that were told they were worthless or they couldn't do this or they couldn't do that when they were, you know, that's how we were brought up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's extremely common.
Exactly. And what's actually happened is because people don't learn any different. They pass it down to the next generation and then the next generation. Whereas those people that got booted out of the box at a young age have broken that mold. And so now I'm raising children who are also completely out of the box with me, doing their best to fit in because they are in the normal school system at the moment. But, you know, but they're strong enough and they're resilient enough to know that, you know what, they're good people and that they had that strength and that confidence about them. They don't always have it. They're still learning, you know, it's a skill that they learn. But, yeah. So,
In what circumstances would you say that NLP is not applicable, or you would not, you know, you might say, well, I'm not sure if this would be an ideal use for it. Are there situations where NLP is not something that you would rely on, or maybe not used primarily?
I'll just interrupt here. Is that water annoying you? Can you hear that?
Not at all. And I don't think anybody on YouTube or podcast land can hear it either. It's just fine.
Yeah, the neighbors decided to wash their balcony. So.
No, I can't hear it at all.
All right, not a way. That's cool. All right. So, look, there obviously, you know, it's different strokes for different folks. And I'm not here to say that NLP is the be-all and end-all for everybody. Everybody's different. One of the biggest things that we won't work with is a couple of cases. If somebody's on antidepressants or some kind of medication, okay, now we won't work with people that are on medication because in a way it kind of numbs the mind, if that makes sense.
Yes.
All right, and that's the job of antidepressants. It doesn't fix the problem in my view. It just sort of like, you know, numbs things and sort of like numbs things out really. And so it makes it difficult for us to be able to work with people fully if they're on antidepressants. So With the doctor's permission, of course, they must get the doctor's permission beforehand. We do ask them to stop taking their antidepressants, all right, because we're just not going to get the results if they are on antidepressants. But they must get their doctor's permission. It's something that we do need to work with actually medical professionals, because we're not medical professionals. So we do have to actually seek that permission. And it's completely up to the doctor or the psychiatrist or psychologist on whether that happens or not. So we are sort of like, you know, we're not governed, but we're sort of like, you know, we must check with those. So that's one case where if somebody's not prepared to come off those medications, then NLP won't help them that much because it's numbed them. On the other, there's one other time when we struggle to effectively use NLP, and that's when people have what we call secondary gain. All right, now this is when, for whatever reason, their belief system is strong enough that they believe they have a bigger reason to hang on to it than let it go.
Okay, so would that be where they're just very resistant?
Very resistant. So yeah. So let's take, for example, somebody like, well, the way we explain it, we talk about, you know, you having a chair on your shoulder. All right. So imagine you've got a chair on your shoulder right now, and over the years this chair has got really heavy and it's got really cumbersome, and it's weighing you down all the time, and it's a really heavy chair. Okay, and so there's several things that people can actually do with that chair. They can, like, you know, they can complain to their friends about how heavy the chair is, and oh my gosh, it controls my life, and it's just, oh, the chair, it's so heavy, it's like, you know. And people can even go and join a support group where they're going to find other people with the same chair, and they can all talk about how bad the chair is and how terrible the chair is, and get comfort from that. People get comfort from going to these support groups where they, you know, they can all talk about, you know, how awful the chair is and how terrible the chair is, and you know, it's because of the chair that they haven't got what they want in life, if you get what I mean. You know?
Yeah.
And there's so many things people can do to keep the chair on their shoulder, all right? Or they can make a decision one day just to put the damn chair down. But that's scary to do. Do you know what I mean? It can be scary to put that chair down. However, if they just put the chair down, they might be able to walk away from it.
Right, and that's where they need the help. Clearly, whether you would put them in new circumstances or try to make them see their lives in a different way somehow. Let's talk about your book. Can you tell us what your book is titled and what the focus of it is?
Okay, all right. So on March 23rd, when all of my clients called one after another, I was doing business coaching. They all called one after another to say that they were closing their businesses down or they were stopping business for a while. Naturally, I was the first to go. And so I actually decided that I needed to do a big pivot. And I wrote a book. It's a book I wrote within 24 hours because wow. I know this stuff like the back of my hand. It's like just, and it's flowed. It just absolutely flowed.
You must have had a lot of caffeine.
I've got a very understanding family.
Yeah.
A beautiful family who just knows when mum gets in her creative, she's just going to be left alone.
Maybe I need to take your example and just say, I'm not going to sleep and just knock this thing out in 24 hours. It's a little bit of a rough way to do it, but I do understand exactly where you're coming from. I used to do that when I was in college, and you know, we'd have so many writing assignments in college. But please continue with what you were saying about the book.
Yeah. So what I ended up with was this 9-step blueprint of exactly what people could do who had just, if they'd just lost their job, or they'd lost their business, or their income due to what was going on in the world. And it was a 9-step blueprint on how they could actually go and create a business from scratch or an income stream from scratch with very little money down. And so it goes into full detail. It deals with things like, you know, leverage and, you know, making a plan and knowing your genius zone and there's a lot of mindset, because that's what holds people back mostly in their business. Even Tony Robbins says 80% of business is mindset and 20% is mechanics. So, I mean, even though you might know what to do, you can still sabotage. You can do all kinds of things to make sure your business fails if your mindset's not right. Been there, done that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the book's actually called Lockdown Took My Income. And it's basically a way for people to be able to get their control back, you know, and get another way, another form of income, another business started from very little down, which if people are in a career and they've always wanted to start their own business, when is now the time to do it, right? And for those who have had their business closed, they need to pivot rather than sitting on the couch doing the old woe is me and watching Netflix. What else could you do? What else could you change? I mean, they say 3/4 of the businesses are not going to reopen. Well, what are you going to do? Go and get a job with millions of others that are going for the same lower amount of jobs now?
What do you do?
Yeah, that's right. You upskill. You make sure you put yourself in the position where you are the best candidate. If that's what you're doing, if you want to go out and get a job, then you've got to be prepared for the fact that your employer, and this is one of the things that people aren't thinking about, your employer is going to have much more choice with potential employees. And let's face it, let's be absolutely honest here, and I'd like all of your listeners to really just be honest with themselves here and put themselves in their employer's shoes. As much as you would like your employer to be loyal to you, if they could find somebody that had twice your ability and twice your skills for the same money, can you blame them?
I totally get that point. I call it the most popular boy or girl at the prom syndrome. Because whether you're a young girl or a young man, in the high school prom, so to speak, you know, whoever the most popular person is, you have a million boys chasing after you, so you feel this elevated sense. Or if, you know, you're a male or a young boy, you feel the opposite, you know, the popular football hero or something. So they feel, oh, I'm so popular, all the girls are chasing after me, or all the boys are chasing after you, whatever. But the employer is always in that spot, where, look, I've got 1,000 people applying for whatever position on a daily basis. So I want the youngest person, the most qualified person, the person with the most experience that I could possibly find on the planet, who is willing to accept the lowest amount of pay and will work whatever crazy hours I require. They're not wrong for doing that. I'm a firm believer in people starting their own businesses if they can. So learn what you need to learn, but be receptive to that. I think it's always preferable for people to feel empowered and try to take back some of that autonomy. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things I'd really like to point out, David, is like, you know, you're talking about the most popular boy and the most popular girl. Look at those people. Look at why that's the case. Why are they popular? Let's talk about the job, okay? Okay, so he's good at what he does, okay? He's found his genius zone, for example, and he excels at what he does, okay? So people flock to that. Okay, so what do you excel at? What are you, you know, best at? Because we've all got our own talents. We've all got our own abilities, and we can all do things differently or better than someone else. So utilize this time rather than sitting there asking everyone on Facebook what the latest Netflix series is, to find out what it is that, you know, you rock at. What is it that, like, sets your soul on fire? What is it that, like, makes your heart sing? Because when you find that thing, then excelling at it and being better than the guy down the road at it, it's not that difficult.
I agree totally. I think they call that the sweet spot in marketing. What is your sweet spot? The area that, like, here is the things that you are particularly good at. And then there are the things that your local market or economy or what have you, what they need, and then what you enjoy. So you find an area, like a Venn diagram, the area in which those three intersect. So how do you find the things that you're good at, that you enjoy doing, and that there is a need for? And you find where those three intersect, and then you go right for them, you know. And I think that's the hard part. And I think so many people have difficulty answering that question, because how can they look at themselves objectively? And I think that's where the value of coaches or NLP or introspection in general, where those things come into play and can become valuable. Miney, what would you like to touch on that I didn't mention thus far? Because we basically have gone through my list of questions.
Good. Okay. So have I answered your queries about NLP?
I could talk to you all day long about it. I'd probably drive you nuts. but I've always been interested in it, and just, you know, case studies and, you know, personal experiences with it. So obviously I could talk about it much longer. So maybe, is there anything that you would like to bring up that I didn't touch on?
What I'd like to actually mention, David, is that anybody can do this. This is the thing. There's so many people that are so worried about stepping out, about being different. There's so many people that are in the box. They drive in a box to go sit in a box all day, and then they leave the box and they drive home in a box to go home and sit in a box and watch a box, if you know what I mean.
I do. Yeah, it's, yeah. There was a movie. I mean, it's like a 1984, where you feel like you're in a 1984 world where you can't really express yourself and it's not rewarded. And certainly I think this generation is probably, if you think about people who, this current generation, I think you had 9/11. Then you had the recession, I think 2008, 2009. Now you have a pandemic. So, I mean, depending on your age, you could say, well, I lived through three of these things, pretty much separated every 10 to 12 years. So it's very easy to see how people within that certain age range could feel very stymied and just feel like, wow, how can I get a leg up? How can you reboot and rebuild yourself, not just your self-esteem, but really get a fair shot at life, living the life that you want to live and having the type of business that you want to live?
Absolutely. Look, the way to do that is to know that you can, and to believe in yourself and believe that you can. Look, we can all have anything you want. I mean, like, look at me, okay? Do you think it's by accident that I live by the beach? Do you think it's by accident that that's how that happens? I mean, I live by some of the most beautiful beaches in Queensland, Australia, because I choose to be here. It's a choice I've made. It's a choice, you know, to actually live here. I also live on the top floor of a building. Do you think that's, you know, by chance? No, it's not, because it's how I've designed my life. And anyone can have whatever it is that they want in life. There is nothing that can hold you back except your own mind and your own mindset. And so know that. I had two parents who did not believe in themselves. They did not know their worth. They did not know their value in life. And both of them died, David, without doing what they wanted to in life. Now, this has been a huge kick in the pants for me, especially when my mother, who died almost a year ago now, grabbed my hand 2 days before she died, and she said to me, all I ever wanted to do was go see the Grand Canyon. Out of all the things I wanted to do in life, that's all I ever wanted to do. And she had the ability. She had, you know, anyone can go and just see the Grand Canyon. She had the ability. She had the funds. She could have got the funds. Do you know what I mean? She could have gone and had her dream. But because she didn't believe in herself and she didn't believe in her self-worth, she never did it. And here she is now. She's gone. It's too late for her. And there's so many people that are sitting in their rocking chairs from 70s and 90 years old saying, I wish I'd done this, I wish I'd done that, but it's too late. It's like, I don't have a bucket list. I have a now list.
Right.
You never know when you're locked in tomorrow. You don't know. It's like, so... do you want to end your life with regrets, or do you want to step out of the damn box and go and get what you want?
So it's just setting that course and doing the internal work to get from point A to point B.
Yes. And might I add that NLP or any of the work you do, there is no shame in doing the work. It's nothing more than a skill set. If you wanted to become a chef, you'd go to chef school. If you wanted to be a police officer, you'd go and train for that. It's no different, okay? There is no shame. Where there's shame is somebody that lives a life less than what they know they're capable of and stays in that box, and who ends up at 90 years old regretting not going to the Grand Canyon, not going and doing the things they wanted to, and realizing that now it's too late for them. That's where the shame is.
Right. And you don't want to be in that position, because you end up, you know, coming to the end of things, like you said, and just feeling completely unfulfilled and disillusioned. So,
yeah.
Well,
how many people do you know that are in that exact spot?
Just about everybody I talk to. I mean, absolutely. Definitely. That's one of the reasons why I wrote my book, because I just kept getting the same questions over and over again.
Yeah.
You know, but in that area, it was very specific about digital marketing, where people would just, why am I not getting phone calls? Well, it's not magical. It's a process. You first have to work out what your goals and objectives are, which ones are most important to you, work out a realistic budget, set realistic metrics. So how will you know if it's successful? How do you define success? Because you won't know it. How will you know if you're successful if you don't know what it means to you? And so I agree 100%. Well, listen, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. How can people get in touch with you and learn more or find your book?
Okay, so the best place to get my book is at tallpoppiesrising.com/lockdown. That's where they'll find the book, so I can put that in for you. I have my own website, marniehomer.com, where there's plenty of freebies, videos for people to look at. And you can reach out to me on Facebook or other social media. I'm told I'm everywhere, so I won't be difficult to find.
And just to help you out with that, it's MAINIHOMER. So anybody interested should type that into Google and give you a look and visit your site. So thank you again for your time. I really appreciate it. And for those of you watching or listening, thank you for tuning into another edition of Rebooting Business. Please check the footnotes with links to learn more. And if you'd like to submit a question, you can also do that as well. So thank you, everybody. And thank you, Manny. Please stay safe, everybody. And Manny, please stick around for one or two more minutes. And that's it for this episode. Thanks again, everybody.
You've been listening to Rebooting Business, the podcast for, about, and by America's small business owners who are ready to reboot and rebuild businesses in a post-COVID-19 world. To learn more about rebooting your business or be a guest on the podcast, please visit www.dms.blue today.